and welcome to the College of Creation. I am Dan.
And I am Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to build items, spells, creatures, and features for 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons. How are you today, Michael?
I'm doing very well. How are you today?
I am so very good. I am surprised at how long it took me to actually come up with something for today. Because it was a very simple prompt, all things
incredibly
considered.
Incredibly simple.
For those uninitiated, would you like to remind the listeners what we rolled for last time and had to make for today?
Yes. As a general rule, if you have not listened to us before, here at the College of Creation, Dan and myself will take a single prompt for a homebrew item in D&D. That could be a subclass, it could be a monster, it could be a feature, something that is playable within the game of D&D. We give ourselves a week to come up with our own ideas for that prompt, and we come back a week later and we share it to each other and to you, the listeners. Today's prompt from last week was an item with the name Fighter's Block.
That's the one. That was it. That's the one from MixelPixel on TikTok. If you're on TikTok, on D&D TikTok specifically, you might have seen this one flying around a little bit ago, but we finally decided to take it on.
Yes, we were both in that same boat where we saw the video and we kind of percolated on what we would come up with. And I was about to make a TikTok about it, and then I just didn't.
Yeah.
And I think you were in the same boat where we just never got around to it. So I'm glad that this came up on our table.
Yeah.
And it was very fun to create.
Super fun. Super fun. I had a good time in the end. I came up with a couple different options. So I actually have come to the table today with more than one item called Fighter's Block.
I do.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to see how many each of us came up with, because it does sound like you can give us a prompt for a single thing and both of us will come up with somewhere around a half a dozen or more.
I don't think either of us expected the other to come back with just one thing. I think that was impossible.
I hope not. Look.
It was a situation that never would have happened.
Can you imagine coming up with a single item and just like tweaking it to the point where it's absolutely 100% perfect and then showing up with it?
Nope.
Okay, cool. Done with that conversation. It's over.
maybe that is the hot take of the day, though, right? Is that I much prefer a series of creative, slightly imbalanced items than one perfectly in sync item that's not as interesting. Oh. I would take that every day of the week. I would love that.
Okay. That's a pretty decent hot take. I would say I agree, though. I would generally agree.
Do you have any hot takes? What's a Dan hot take for D&D?
Ooh, D&D generally or homebrewing?
Do a general D&D hot take first and then a homebrew hot take.
Okay. Here is my just regular D&D hot take.
Okay.
Silvery barbs is fine.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Let me explain. Silvery barbs gets so much heat all the time from everybody and their mother on TikTok talking about how it's so unbalanced and it's on everybody's banned spells list and it's the only spell anyone has ever banned. Guys, it's so unnecessary. It's a fine spell. It's a first level spell. You know, when you're taking it, you're probably between first and fourth level, right? Once you get to fifth level and you start to gain access to third level spells for most of the classes that have it on their list, you're not going to be going back to learn Silvery Barbs instead of something you already have.
Yeah.
It doesn't scale at higher levels, so you're never really going to want to cast it above a second or third level spell slot, right? You have better things to spend the spell slots on instead of a single instance of disadvantage and a single instance of advantage. There are better spells at low levels that grant much longer term bonuses or just better bonuses in general. Or if you want to go the disadvantage route, there are other spells that also grant worse penalties to your enemies for a longer period of time, whatever it is. Apply status conditions instantly better than that. If you can paralyze something. Guiding Bolt is a first level spell and grants advantage on the next attack against a thing. Fairy Fire is a first level spell, and it's a whole area in which anything in that area that fails its save suffers advantage on all attacks against it. Like,
yeah,
that's a way better option than using my reaction and a first level spell slot for one instance of disadvantage. Like, it's really not that bad.
The hitch in it is that it's a reaction and not an action or a bonus action. That's the big thing. And I think maybe the game masters that do ban it, that think it's overpowered, the focus is not on what it does. It's when and how you can do it. So I do see where the argument may stem from. I don't think the argument is viable. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think the argument comes from exactly that. It's this moment where the DM thought that they got one over on you.
I had you.
Oh, but you got me. But I love that. I want my players to do that. I want myself to go at my players with everything that I have and for them to pull something out of their hat at the last minute to undo what I just did. And everybody at the table to lose their minds over how cool that was.
Oh,
that
is
all I want.
If Silvery Barbs is the thing that allows a player to, in the 11th hour, sneak out of a defeat, that is so juicy. Like, that, I'm eating it up. I can't get enough of that stuff.
Anyway, that's all. I don't ban spells at my tables at all, much less Silvery Barbs, which I think is an okay spell.
I'd ban something like Acid Splash, which is the worst cantrip.
Yeah.
Poison Spray exists. Why are you taking Acid Splash? Ban it. So you can't even get yourself into that predicament.
True Strike. True Strike is the one.
True Strike. Yeah.
What about you? Do you have an actual hot take?
I do. It's pretty hot.
How hot is it?
It's pretty hot to the point where people think this mechanic shouldn't even be included in the game.
Ooh.
I think, with my hot take, the most important piece and my preferred starting point of character creation is alignment.
That's fascinating.
I think it's the most important part. Not in the way that they have it structured. Mm-hmm. I don't like that it's just a drop-down box. Admittedly, I will say that is a bad way to approach it. Alignment is so much more than that. So if you start with your alignment, where your character is at the beginning of a campaign, you start there, and then you think, where was your character's alignment 5 years back? Where does your character aspire to be alignment-wise 5 years in the future? And which alignments around the grid are you willing to pass through to get to that place? You're establishing your alignment boundaries, right?
Yeah.
I find myself to be a lawful, neutral paladin. I follow the law. I am sort of ambiguous in how I follow it, but generally I'm kind to people and I do things societally the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to become lawful good.
Mm-hmm.
Where do I go to get that? What in my oath am I going to follow without deviation to get to lawful good? Am I willing to, in the name of my oath, dip into lawful evil to get around to what I think, what I perceive is lawful good.
Interesting.
Certainly I'm not going down into chaos because I want to stay up top. I want to stay above board.
Huh.
But will I do something? Could I bring my physical self to do something that I would consider evil to get to good on the other side of it? So alignment is the most important thing because it is what establishes the pathway for your character all the way through the game.
That is so interesting. So you, because I know there are alternative options to the 3x3 grid, right? Do you expand that grid at all for this concept? There's like the Magic the Gathering wheel alignment also.
There's the wheel, I don't necessarily like or dislike either of those. I think either of them is a good enough representation of it to use this kind of mindset going in. It's more of a gradient scale, though. So it's not a stark jump from I was chaotic neutral and I'm going crazy to true neutral where I'm just like apathetic. Like that's a huge jump if you're just going on the grid. But it's always a narrative reason for a gradual descent from law or up from chaos.
I don't do the same thing. I do not mess around too much with alignment in my games, you know. But usually I come around on some sort of like order versus chaos sort of thing. You know, the idea that like law doesn't necessarily mean like actual strict laws or the strict rules of a society, but more your adherence to a personal code or order in general or whatever it is.
Yeah. Right? Alignment should be more internal than external.
Yeah.
It should be an intrinsic reflection of how you see yourself and where you want to go. That's why a BBEG of any given campaign can be lawful good.
Yeah.
They can see themselves as lawful good. That's where I come around to alignment as an internal intrinsic value system is the most important piece of character creation.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. Michael Barlos wants you to start your character creation by very, very clearly defining their 3x3 grid alignment. Do that first before you do anything else.
Alignment is the most important.
Alignment is There's the most no important thing. That. All right. Do you want to hear my homebrew hot take?
I would love to.
I feel like too many things are attached to proficiency bonus, and I think it's not actually a very good metric.
Interesting.
I think it's...
What's your reason for that?
I think it's just lazy.
I both agree and disagree, depending on the thing that you're homebrewing.
I think it's just mostly lazy design, because it's this thing that automatically goes up as you get stronger. So it's not tied to anything narratively, right? It's just...
Right.
You know, it's just this number that goes up because we need the numbers to be higher when we get up to the higher levels.
Yeah.
And so attaching class features to proficiency, or attaching racial features to proficiency, or attaching whatever other features to proficiency bonus is a way to easily have it scale to higher levels, but it also is the laziest way to do that. For me, it's always going to be more fulfilling to have that attached to the character in some way. So I'm going to attach it to an ability score that is key to that character. Mm-hmm. Or at the very least, I'm going to attach it to class level. That is going to be like...
Class level.
And like, I will admit, sometimes I cave and I'm like, look, the easiest way to make this happen is proficiency. But I don't like doing it every time I do it.
Sometimes I'll do proficiency bonus with something.
Yeah.
You know, like if it's a dice pool, I'll say your proficiency bonus plus your... Dex modifier or something like that.
Yeah, even there, I'd even be like, is it reasonable for me to just double the Dex modifier for this instead? Is that crazy? If it is, then I can probably just do what is your bonus?
And I suppose the argument against that would be that a min-maxer, if you're optimizing your character, you're going to boost that primary ability stat as high as you can right at the beginning of the game, so that gives you an advantage early on. But why not? You know, like if you have a min-maxer at your table, allow them to be strong, allow them to be good at what they're doing. So if they can do something 5 times per long rest as opposed to 3, who cares? Like let them have that power.
You said a lot with a little there, Michael. If you got a min-maxer at your table, let them do the thing. Like there's such a we're in hot take territory right now, where I'm just ready to rant on anything and everything. But truly, like if everybody else at the table is fine with it, if there is agreement, you know, if there's obviously we want to have a good consensual fun experience for everyone, right? But if you've got a min-maxer at your table who wants to be powerful and do the powerful thing and be like, look at this character I made that can do these cool things. Let them do the cool things. That's what they're there for. If you don't let them do that thing, they'll leave. They'll go find a different table that will let them do the thing.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any other hot takes you want to share, Michael?
I think maybe not a hot take, certainly a warm take for homebrew. Anybody that's in the camp that says, why homebrew when you could just reskin something? That is the worst take ever. It's such a bad framework to be operating under. And, you know, it has to be, you know, well balanced, and it has to have the right things at the right levels. It has to have the right syntax that, like we talked about last episode, it has to have all those things in place. But there are just some things that you can't achieve by reskinning things based on the rules that are written.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that if you are at a place where you can effectively homebrew something for your table, which I think that both of us are, I think that is it's an additional layer that can be unlocked in creativity and fluidity and inclusion for the people at your table that can't quite be reached by reskinning.
Yeah.
So anybody that says why homebrew when you can just reskin something that already exists, that's a bad take to have.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Enough hot takes and belaboring the point, though, because I'm desperate to share with you my fighter's blocks.
Time for fighter's block.
Blocks, indeed. Got some sibilance going on because I've got four things to share with you today.
I love,
Michael. I created four different items called fighter's block based on different definitions of blocks and different aspects of the fighter. So here, I'm sending that over to you now. You've got it open. And I'll just go through these four. Number one here is the fighter's block. It is a warhammer, which requires attunement. It has a +1 bonus to attack and damage rolls, because magic weapon, all of that good stuff. But in addition, when a condition, spell, or other feature would prevent you from taking actions on your turn, that feature does not prevent you from making melee weapon attacks with this weapon.
Oh, so I like that.
If you are stuck with nothing else to do, there's always the fighter's block.
Still hit. That could come in clutch against like aberrations and stuff. Any mind control type of...
Yeah.
That's great.
Would remove your actions. Confusion spell is basically, you know, you still can't run. You still can't move, whatever else, but there you go. The second option here is the first of two that are a physical block. The first one is the fighter's block. It's a small cube bearing figurative arcane symbols on each of its faces. As a bonus action, you may roll the cube. Roll a d6 and consult the table below. The cube immediately transforms into the corresponding martial weapon. The weapon counts as a martial melee weapon in which you are proficient and deals an additional 1d6 of the listed damage type. The weapon remains in its chosen form until the next dawn. So these weapons are a flaming battle axe that deals fire damage, a toxic trident that does poison damage, a frosty greatsword that deals cold damage, a mocking rapier that deals psychic damage, a thunderous warhammer that deals thunder damage, and a storm whip that deals lightning damage. So the assumption is that if you're a fighter, you have some sort of level of proficiency in most or all of these. It's a martial weapon. You just get what you get.
So I don't know if this was purposeful or not, but it doesn't specify that it requires attunement by a fighter. So
it doesn't. You're right. Yeah.
So it's just any character that can use a weapon.
Yeah.
Like it's incredible.
I should maybe change that because it is a fighter's block, so it really ought to be meant for fighters. But I was kind of just rolling through these at one point, putting them into the homebrewery. Sure. But that is the first of the two dice, I suppose you could call them. The second fighter's block is a small cube bearing figurative arcane symbols on each of his faces. As a bonus action, you may roll the cube. Roll the d6 and consult the table below, and you gain the corresponding fighting style until you complete a short or long rest. Once you use the cube in this way, you may not do so again until you complete a short or long rest. So for a day, you can gain archery, or blind fighting, or dueling, or great weapon fighting, or two-weapon fighting, or unarmed fighting. It's sort of situational and might not work for a fighter. I don't really know how much this would change your daily existence, but here it is.
As long as you have one of those items ready to go. Like, you gain the archery fighting style, but you don't have a bow and arrow ready to go.
You know, I guess it would inspire you to always have at least a ranged weapon and a martial weapon. Maybe always have a big weapon. Maybe always have two little weapons and have a ranged weapon. And then you're cover all around
based on what my die says every morning.
And then finally,
that's really cool.
We'll do the fighter's block, which is a shield. Requires attunement. And this magic shield is enchanted to ward off blows from even the most practiced warriors. While wielding this shield, you are immune to non-magical bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage dealt by martial weapons. The idea being that if a fighter comes and tries to hit you, you can block it.
That's great.
That's it.
That's really all you can ask from that type of shield.
They're all pretty simple. You've got a block that hits hard. You've got two blocks that you can roll, and you've got one block that blocks.
So many blocks.
Absolutely. So that's the things I came up with. Mostly, I just had a really good time coming up with different options for these and being like, what's fun? I probably came up with another 4-2-6 that I decided was like not quite there, didn't quite fit the bill exactly, or I couldn't think of a creative enough way to make it happen. But these four I feel like are a little fun.
Yeah, they're great. Super flavorful. There's a lot of potential for them being, you know, quest rewards, especially at lower levels. They would be fantastic things that you could just like find in the back of a shop, maybe.
Yeah.
The shopkeeper's like, I have these dice.
Exactly. It's
Oh God, it's a Warhammer. Oh no.
Definitely the dice feel like weird nonsense that you would find in a curio shop.
Yeah.
Like you could put those two on a random table for like merchant shop nonsense. They would fit right in beautifully.
I love the idea of either of those items being unidentifiable at lower levels. Nobody has identify. You find them in the wild and they're just stones, essentially. They're with markings on them.
Yep.
What do we do with these? I don't know, man. I'm gonna roll it, see what happens. Yep. Boom.
There you go.
Poison trident. Love it.
Super fun.
Love it.
Super fun.
We've reached the point where we have deviated away.
Amazing.
From doing the same thing.
Please tell me what you made, because yeah, I was hoping that we wouldn't both come up with the exact same nonsense. So
I would love for you to open your document.
Okay.
I have six things similarly to you. I couldn't do just one.
So. I'm sorry. I'm reading what you just sent me, and this is very good. This is
okay. So at first I had them all named Fighter's Block with different things in parentheses, and that felt disingenuous to what I was doing. So I made the first item Fighter's Block, and then everything else is just kind of a riff off of the riff.
I see that. Yes.
Of what we're doing. So my first item is Fighter's Block. It is a ring. It requires attunement by a creature that can learn a fighting style. Okay. So as a bonus action, you can activate this ring, projecting a small force field in to act as a shield. So think of like the energy shields from like Halo or something. While the ring is active, you gain +1 bonus to your armor class, and you can make use of the protection fighting style.
Oh,
so
fun.
That says in the rules, the protection fighting style, which is able to be taken by fighters and I believe paladins,
yes.
But only those two, I think. If you are within 5 feet of a creature that gets attacked by a melee attack, you can impose disadvantage on that attack. So you can help protect somebody else. So you gain that protection fighting style. Here's where I start going away from this. So my second item is called the Other Fighter's Block. And this is fighters plural possessive. So F-I-G-H-T-E-R-S apostrophe.
Uh-huh.
This is a wondrous item. This beautiful silver amulet has been worn by warriors of all vocations for centuries. It has 6 charges and regains 1d6 expended charges each day at dawn. As an action, you can spend a charge to tap the amulet and emit a kinetic pulse out to 10 feet in every direction, centered on you. Any creature within the area of the pulse can take one less attack as a part of their attack action that they are typically allowed. So if you can take 3 attacks with your attack action, if you're in that pulse, it's reduced to 2. If you can only take 1 attack, it's reduced to 0. If you're coming up on a bunch of, you know, just grunts that can only attack once, if you buzz them with a charge from the amulet, you eliminate a bunch of attacks. It deeply sways the action economy
That's just a
of a turn.
Good mechanic. That's just a really good bonus. I like that so much. Just reducing the number
of
attacks for a multi-attack is great.
It blocks other fighters.
Yep.
I did stipulate so it wasn't vastly overpowered. Creatures affected by this item can still take attacks of opportunity as a reaction,
right.
and any attacks available as a bonus action, legendary, mythic, or lair action.
Yeah.
I'm going to skip up to the top of the second column here.
Okay.
This item is a block for fighters.
Good.
This is not a wondrous item. This is just your typical adventuring gear.
Sick.
I dove into the equipment side of things. This is a whetstone that can be used to sharpen any bladed weapon. If you spend 1 minute using it on a weapon you have equipped, you can maximize one damage die on each of your next three attacks.
Oh.
So if you roll, 2d6 or whatever, you have a guaranteed six on one of those die.
Right.
Or three attacks in a row. After the block is used in this manner 10 times, it becomes a normal whetstone and no longer gives this benefit. As we've spoken about before, I love things that are consumable.
Mm-hmm.
I like things that don't necessarily deal damage, but can be used to enhance damage a certain amount of times before they're rendered inert. And so this fits right into what I really like to see. Items that can be used in a smart way. So you can serve them for specific things.
That's great. That's great. I love that.
Actually, I don't know if I've talked about this since maybe the first episode. Anytime I homebrew something, I give myself a one rule. Anytime I homebrew a prompt, I have one rule that I have to follow throughout. I try and keep to these rules that I set for myself as closely as possible, because I think that it eliminates the most obvious option right out of the gate. My one rule for this week was no damage dealing for items.
Yeah.
I wanted to make all items that don't deal damage.
Yeah.
So the next one, we're going to shift down to the bottom here.
Okay.
This is a potion that I call the Fighter's Beta Blocker. This ingestible medication is commonly used to treat problems involving the heart and the circulatory system. Upon drinking this viscous clear liquid, you are resistant to necrotic damage. Additionally, anytime you take non-magical bludgeoning, piercing, or slashing damage, you gain a number of temporary hit points according to the table below. So anytime you get hit, you're boosted with temp hit points.
Ooh, wow.
We have five levels of rarity. We have common through legendary. Common rarity, you gain 1d4 temp hit points anytime you're hit with those three damage types, and it lasts for 10 minutes.
Okay.
The second level here, we have the insured blocker. That's uncommon. You grab 2d4 temp hit points, and that lasts for a half an hour. The premium blocker gives you 2d6 for an hour. The pure blocker gives you 3d6 for an hour and a half, or 90 minutes. And the monarchal blocker, the ones reserved for the kings and queens of the land, that's 3d8 every time you take bludgeoning, piercing, slashing damage. And a reminder to all of those that play D&D, temp HP does not stack. So don't get too excited about this.
Yeah.
And that's pretty great 2 hours.
So it is pretty great.
Still pretty great.
Pretty slick.
Yeah.
I would ask one favor of you, though. Just because you have the insured beta blocker on there, that you rename all of these potions based on the tiers for the U.S. healthcare plans, like bronze and then bronze plus and silver plus and gold. That would be so good. I appreciate this in general. It's almost a one-up on my shield there of, like, it doesn't only negate non-magical bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage. Or does it negate? It just, you take it and then you gain temp HP, right?
You just take it. Okay. Yeah, you just
so you take
it
the damage, but then you get a little bit of a temp HP back, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
That is honestly really, really solid.
My next one, number 5 out of 6, I call this the Flighter's Block.
Okay.
This is a heavy cinder block. It's cumbersome and awkward for any creature that's not used to carrying it. If you are grappling another creature, you can use your reaction to magically tie this block onto their body. Their movement speed is reduced by 10, and they can't fly until they destroy the block or use an action to make a successful strength check to detach from it. The block has 10 hit points and is vulnerable to thunder damage.
Cool. I like. It's almost like it's got like a
common item.
You know, grapple without the ability to actually, you don't have to stay there and hang on to the person. You can kind of like grapple them, tie them up, and then you can go do something else.
But, and my last one, number 6 out of 6, I strayed away from items for this last one, and I made a monster stat block.
Ooh.
And this is a swarm.
Okay.
I call this the Fighter's Flock. And it's
Very good. Very good.
This is a medium-sized swarm of tiny constructs. It's just a bunch of swords, like a little
just a whole bunch of swords.
With an armor class of 13, 20 hit points, 20 feet of fly speed with the ability to hover. So it's not overwhelmingly strong. It's just something that could be a quick conjure, something akin to like a swarm of insects or a swarm of ravens, something like that. But it is immune to quite a few things because they're made of metal. Yep. They're constructs. So it's immune to necrotic poison and psychic damage and a whole slew of conditional immunities. It has blind sight out to 15 feet. I figure that's the only way it can sense where other things are. So maybe it's just you'd use one of these to guard a door or something like that.
I like the idea of this just being like a bunch of little like tin soldiers that get animated into a whirlwind of fighters, tiny little fighters.
Yeah, they're just kind of hovering around in space, slashing.
Slashing blindly.
And they only have one attack. They attack with their blades. That's the fighter's flock.
Pretty fun. Pretty fun. I love the playing with words here. I love the wordplay through all of these object here Thank creations. You. It's very gives it some whimsy that I really appreciate.
Yeah. I feel like I've been lacking that.
It's very good.
Thank you, man.
I am amused. You have amused and delighted me. So congratulations.
The whole point of this whole show.
The whole point of the show, indeed. Yeah, I think these are very fun. I was not expecting all of these, certainly. I certainly wasn't expecting Fighter's Beta Blocker. Again, I think the other Fighter's Block is a very cool mechanic. I gotta say, I think my favorite of these here is probably the Block for Fighters, though, in that it is just adventuring gear. It's like a high-quality whetstone that just gives you max damage on three attacks, which is the kind of thing that like this has the potential to be this kind of thing that somebody does like at the end of every short rest. They're like, I'm spending my short rest, you know, sharpening my blade on this high quality whetstone. When I do a long rest or a short rest before the party kind of knows that they're going into something heavy, I have the kind of players who like to narrate, you know, what they're doing to mentally, physically, emotionally prepare for whatever big moment is coming up. And this is the kind of thing that, like, you can talk about how you're sharpening your blade, but also it does have a mechanical benefit. Pretty minor in the grand scheme of things. You know, it's three attacks where you get to maximize damage, which is good. It's not game-breaking by any means, but it allows for those moments of narrative creativity to also have some mechanical stuff. And I love playing with allowing those things to work together and have good synergy.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I was trying to, like I said, my rule today was to not do damage. And I suppose the fighters are known for, you know, being damage sponges. They're going in and dealing damage in battle. So I wanted to have auxiliary items for them.
Yeah.
And give them something else.
Absolutely. If anybody out there has some other ideas for Fighter's Block, obviously, you know, you may have shared them on TikTok or something else already with MixelPixel as well. But if not, you can feel free to share them with us. You can reach out to either of us or both of us at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com if you want to shoot us an email. Or you can find me on TikTok. I'm at SirDrK, and Michael over here is at Michael_Barlos.
Please reach out to us. We'd love to talk to you about Fighter's Block or just homebrew in general.
Absolutely.
I probably can't talk about it enough. I love it.
Very, very fun. Well, we didn't have Writer's Block with our Fighter's Block today. Sorry about that one. But it will be interesting to find out if we will have quite so much success with next week's. What should we make next week?
I believe it's your turn to roll for that. I have our table up. Dan and I have taken prompts from TikTok, from Reddit, from Discord, and we've combined them all, put them into a rollable table on which Dan will be rolling now to see what we'll be making for next week.
Let's see what we got. Oh boy. That one is an 8.
An 8 is a magic item with scaled effects that level with a character's level.
That's pretty simple. That's pretty...
That's very open. It's very open-ended.
a magic item that's tied to character level. Interesting. See, this is, we're getting into a weird thing with proficiency bonus here, where like I'm gonna have to avoid right. scaling with proficiency bonus because that's not what we're about.
This was from So You Wanna Be a DM on TikTok.
Ah, indeed. Hey, thanks, Justin.
Also, go follow Justin's podcast, So You Wanna Be a DM.
Yeah.
Available the same place that you're listening to this.
I assume. Michael, I gotta be honest, I have absolutely no clue what I'm gonna do next time, but I will come up with something, and I will have something to present.
I don't know.
In the meantime, I hope you have a good day. Anything else you want to say to the people before we say goodbye?
I always have something that I'd like to say to the people before we say goodbye. Hey, listeners, if you're having a bad day, it's all right to have a bad day. You can sit in your bad day and just have that. And I hope that it gets better. And I know that it will. But it's not a requirement. You can just have a bad day sometimes.
Yeah.
Because that's life.
Yep.
In any case, whether you're having a bad day, a good day, a medium day, any of the gray area in between those things, I hope you're taking care of yourselves.
Thanks, Michael. Bye.
Thank you, Dan.
Class dismissed. Hey folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the College of Creation. If you want to see our creations from this episode and all of our past episode creations, you can find those for free on our Patreon page at patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And if you decide to become a patron, you will also automatically get access to any revised versions, plus our patron Discord and bonus episodes where Michael and me just talk about all kinds of things. You can send your homebrew prompts and questions to collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com. Our music is by Fuser Wolf. You can check out his tunes on Bandcamp and Spotify. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will see you right here again next week.